Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 18th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Oh, a whole bunch of stuff is happening. We had a whole week of baseball and earthquakes and stuff. Really a disaster week.
Exactly, yeah. We want to take the time right now and say with all the damage caused by the series of earthquakes in Kumamoto Prefecture, we think of all those folks as we sit down right now to talk about baseball. Our hearts go out to those affected, and the damage was over a really wide area, so we keep them all in our thoughts as we move forward through this week. I know it's going to be a tough time for a while to get everything back to normal. So,
it is. I mean, thank goodness the death toll was very low, has been, but hundreds of thousands of people out of their houses.
And, a lot of damaged buildings everywhere, roads. It's going to take a while to get back, but we've done it before, so I know we'll be able to do it again. So we're thinking about you guys. All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Guillermo Moscoso of the DeNA Bay Stars, and we're going to talk about the Bay Stars, a controversial collision play, notes, and answer a great listener question. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I got to go out on Saturday for the first time to do an interview at a park this year. Yay!
Wow, really?
And this was Saturday the 10th, not the 16th. I did do this interview more than a week ago, but it's still very timely. And I went to Yokohama Stadium to talk to Guillermo Moscoso. Finally had the opportunity to sit down and talk with him. Tried to do that in 2014. Couldn't catch up with him. I wasn't around or he wasn't around.
Say, was he moving too fast?
Yeah, he's moving. Yeah, and I think he was starting one day and I gave up on trying to talk to him. I don't know. Some guys talk on the days that they start and others don't. So I didn't want to even bother. And I think I went to a different park. I did try to go out last year and talk to him, but that was the day that he was sent down because of a bad hamstring, which he'll talk about during this interview. And he said he's all healed up. Mm-hmm. He's gotten better in the off season, so that's good. He's 32. He's in his third year with the Bay Stars. He's 13-16 overall. He spent about five seasons in the majors, and he's been a pretty effective pitcher for the Bay Stars. And you'll hear in his chat that he has a lot of faith in this team. So let's get a listen to what Guillermo Moscoso had to say. Our guest this week is Guillermo Moscoso, and we're so happy to have him on the show after trying to get him for about 3 years.
Well, finally.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, now we spoke on opening day last year, and that was amid the problems with the
hamstring. My left hamstring, yeah. Well, last year, you know, it was up and down for me, more down because I got hurt,
right,
my left hamstring. But, you know, other than that, you know, I worked hard in the all season, you know, trying to get back 100%. But, you know, here I am. You know, I'm pitching two games. You know, my arms are still doing so great. My legs are fine. So, you know, everything so far, it's going well.
Okay. Now, this season you have a new manager in Alex Ramirez. Now, how is it to have the language barrier completely gone with your manager here in Japan?
Well, you know, it's very important to have a great communication with managers. You know, last previous year, you know, I mean, we have a translator. We speak to them a lot with Nakata. But now we have Alex, and, you know, he's been playing here for a long time. You know how to play baseball here, so it's a great communication. He's doing really good, you know. I mean, the team, we've been losing a lot of games, but one run, two run, but we're going to be okay. He's doing a great job.
Okay. Now, yeah, I just asked you that you guys speak a lot of Spanish together, and how is it to be able to speak your native language when you're talking to your manager?
I feel more confident, you know, more comfortable, you know, because he speaks right straight to me, you know, the things, how it is, you know. It's better communication. It's great communication.
Okay. Now, this team last year at the All-Star break, and I think it was just a half a game, but the team was in first place. So you come into this year, how should we feel about the Bay Stars?
You know, a lot of people expecting us to win, you know. We have a good team. We have a great teammates, young guys with really good talent. But, you know, we haven't going tough time right now, but it's going to be okay. We're losing some of the big games, one run, two runs, but we're going to be okay because those guys are playing really hard. You know, we have a lot of pressure now because a lot of people expecting us to win, but, you know, we're going to be okay.
Now, what about some of those young players? You have a young catcher. You've got young players in the really important positions in the infield. You're saying that people are expecting you to win, but then how do you guys look at those young players? Because you need them to produce.
Yeah, well, you know, like if you see other teams like Dragons, Hiroshima, those, you know, go to kind of reconstruction, you know, like, you know, giving more playing time to those young guys, you know, they need to grow up, you know, they need to learn about the baseball, you know. And, of course, you know, we want to win, but they're, you know, young guys, and they're learning a lot, and then they have a big responsibility for us because they're like regular playing time every day. So they're doing great. I mean, it's really surprising for me when those, like Kawashita, he's a catcher, rookie guy, first year, and he looked like he's been catching for a long time in this league, you know, so that's very important for the older young guys out trying to follow that, what they're doing, you know.
How does he look like he's been catching for a long time? What is it that he's doing?
Well, the way he called the games, the way he acts in the game, on the field, you know, like he's, you know, he looked like he have a lot of experience, you know. He's the first year in the league, and he surprised not only me, other guys, you know, like he's tremendous, you know.
Yeah, he made an impression to get the starting job out of camp. All right, now you guys play at a home run park. I mean, we saw one last night with Yuhei, a ball that probably wouldn't have gone out of too many parks in Japan. But how do you go about attacking hitters the way you want to when you're pitching at this park?
You need to attack it aggressively, you know. You need to hit the ball inside, you know. You cannot let them stand their arm, you know. You have to pitch. You have to be, you know, really confident to command the zone on the corners, you know. It's a hitter's part, so, you know, we need to really have confidence throwing the ball on the corners and, you know, command the balls.
Now, how does your philosophy change when you go on the road and pitch maybe, like, not necessarily Nagoya Dome because that's the opposite of this kind of park, but maybe when you're in Hiroshima and now Tokyo Dome and other places?
Well, pretty much decentrally, I mean, all the stadiums are small, you know. Only Nagoya and Koshien, they are bigger stadium than the other one. But, you know, it's one of the things that I never think about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I just go on the mound and trying to make good pitches, you know, no matter if it's a big field or small field, you know. They're professional here, so, you know, they have big paws, so they can hit home run anywhere, you know.
All right. Now, you did some work out of the bullpen for the Bay Stars last year. How do you feel about the bullpen as opposed to being a starting pitcher?
Well, you know, when I was in state, I was a reliever and I was a starter. But last year, you know, with the hamstring problem, you know, they're trying to switch me to the bullpen. That didn't work at all.
Right, yeah.
So I think it was not on the right moment to switch because we have issues at the bullpen. So I put myself, I can help the team on the bullpen, out of the bullpen. But, you know, I did not. You know, I was hurt. I was trying to do my best, and then my body let me go. So, you know. There was, you know, they talked to me and then, you know, they say we're gonna push you back to start. You're one of the best starters for the team, so we're gonna mess you up. So that's what happened.
But do you prefer that starting?
I'm a starting pitcher. I've been starting all my career, so, you know, yes.
Okay. Now, this pitching staff, it also has a few young pitchers. How do you see the pitching staff playing out this year? I mean, do you see them winning a lot of games or just getting a lot of experience?
I mean, pitching are doing a great job. Young guys, veteran guys, you know, it's a good mix, you know. Those guys are go up there and they're throwing the ball really good.
And you're expecting a lot of wins from them, or are you just expecting them to get a lot of experience and just be better as the season goes along?
Well, you know, they need to keep doing what they're doing because a win will come as a result at the end of the game. You know, they need to keep pitching the ball the way they're doing, and then, you know, we'll have a good result of that.
All right, now the anti-collision rule. You've got anti-collision at home plate and obviously at the bases too. Now, as a pitcher, how do you feel about the rule? Does it change your decision about a particular pitch because you don't want a ball to go to the outfield? And, I mean, how does your approach change?
Well, you know, as a positive side, negative side, you know. If it's happened to my team, you know, of course I will be happy because, you know, 12. But if it's the other team, I mean, you're going to be, oh, come on, you know. I mean, baseball is changing, you know. Rules are changing, but it's for the safety of the players, you know. We see so many guys get hurt and they're not able to come back, you know. And I think if that's the right decision for them to make, you know, keep players out of the big injuries, you know.
What about the you talked to your catcher about it, and because maybe, for example, on a wild pitch too, you have to go and cover home plate. And what did they taught you and talked about it in practice in terms of you?
We practice that in camp, you know, wide pitch and how to cover the home plate. We have to go like from the home plate. We cannot cross the home plate. So yeah, we do practice a lot.
What about in that example? Because we saw a play. I'm not sure if you saw it, but there was a play last week where one of the catchers he could have used part of the play. He had the ball, so he actually could have blocked the plate because he had the ball. But what are they teaching you?
It's something about the timing. You know, like if when the run is coming home and the ball is not on the catcher's glove, that's when the catcher have to, you know. Not have to be between the line and the home plate, you know. It's kind of timing play, you know. It's really hard to get used to because it's the biggest starter.
Yeah.
And a player, you know, they're used to go, you know, straight home plate, and now it's changing. So, I mean, more plays we have on home plate, they're going to learn more and they're going to get more fixes on it.
Okay, well, we'll be watching that. All right. Last question. Now, the Central League was really close last year. All the teams really tight. How do you see that playing out this year? You think it's going to be the same situation, or you think it's going to be different, or what?
Well, you know, we just started. We have 12 games already. And then our teams, I mean, they're all really competitive teams, you know. I think by half of the year, you probably have idea who's going to go to the CS, who or not. But, you know, we're having a rough time, but we are fine. I mean, the team are playing well. And any moment, the guys are going to start hitting, and we're going to start winning a lot of games, and we're going to be, you know, back in the race, you know. But all the teams are competitive, so it's going to be pretty much similar as us last year.
All right, well, I predicted you guys would finish fairly high, so I'm rooting for you.
Yeah, we're going to work out. We need to start winning now. So, you know, hopefully from today we start winning some games.
All right. Good luck, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, thanks again. And as you could see, he was really eager to do the interview. He didn't even let me get the first question out before he started talking. And it was so funny. And I'm like, oh, you know, because we had talked, you know, and he said, yeah, I would love to be on the show. And this is in 2014. And then, like I said, we were talking on opening day of last year and talking about the Gurriel situation, and we never got to actually hammer that out in this particular podcast because it was, you know, it was last year's stuff. So we but we didn't get a chance to talk. So it was fun to actually get to him, and he was very gracious and gave us a lot of time. Although he did have to go, he did throw a little backdoor slider at us at the end there. I want to get your impressions though first of what you thought of the interview.
Well, I like it. I always like talking to Guillermo, and he's such a, you know, big friendly guy and positive, and he's just so much gosh darn fun. You know, he's...
Where have I heard this before?
Yeah, well, he's one of those guys. I mean, there's a number of, there's a whole, you know, we're, you know, NPB is riddled with these bums. You know, we got to replace them with some extra negativity. What's wrong with Japanese baseball? It's too fun and bright. So, first of all, yes, I think his point is of that, you know, he's back where he was, I think is probably accurate this year is so far. Mm-hmm. Is more like 2014 when he threw 146 innings, 3.39 ERA. That was 2014. That's a good ERA.
Especially in that park.
That's a good ERA in that park and in that year.
Mm-hmm.
So this year is not quite as good, but it's, you know, it's early going. Last year was a bit of a disaster all around. So, you know, I think he pitched 60 plus innings in 15 games, and you know, he's going to go past that pretty soon. So that was interesting. You know, when you were talking about the communication with the manager, I thought that was really interesting. And then I wonder, You know, I used to think about this with the other foreign managers. How about the communication the other way? You know, because the foreigners, you know, they're a minority
mm-hmm.
on the team. You know, on the first team is a maximum of four. So 1/7 up to 1/7 of the active roster can be foreign players.
Right.
And if they all speak the manager's language, that's fine. But the Japanese guys are the ones who are used to talking without an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nice for the guys who normally do. But I wonder, I've always wondered, and I've never thought it's a negative that the manager is speaking through an interpreter. But I don't know why I did this time, but I just wonder how that affected the rest of the team. Of course, on the other hand, I think some of speaking through an interpreter has to do with what the manager is actually saying.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I've heard, I mean, just an example, I remember with Alex Ramirez, and I also remember some Rakuten Eagles guys saying they rarely spoke to the manager. I think it was Jose Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, he didn't often spend a lot of time talking to the manager anyway because they pretty much knew their roles.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what they were supposed to do. They had a closer relationship with the coaches, maybe mm-hmm. the hitting instructors and the fielding instructors, whether it be
right.
the fielding, and that they spoke more with those guys than they really did the manager that much. So I don't know. That's an interesting aspect because mm-hmm. I don't know how much the manager actually goes and strikes up a conversation with one particular player, or if he talks to the same player, maybe he has a favorite player who he talks to all the mm-hmm. time, or there's a star player he needs to deal with all the time, because mm-hmm. you know, you need to stroke some of those egos sometimes. So I don't know what that dynamic is like, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it either.
Yeah, well anyway, I did think about it this time for some reason, and oddly enough, you know, Alex speaks more Japanese than I would say any recent foreign manager.
I would say that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, other than like some of the Japanese guys from Hawaii who managed back in the 50s. So it is interesting, and it is an interesting dynamic. And of course, he's working hard. In the past, the foreign managers have been asked to come in and make changes. And he's treading very carefully. You know, he talked about it, but I think he's being more cautious.
He being...
Alex Ramirez, he's being more cautious than he talked about over the previous years about, you know, his vision of adapting foreign methods
uh-huh.
and packaging them in ways that would be palatable to Japanese players.
Well, perhaps it's just like a politician who says, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And they make a lot of promises and they take the office and they see how it's not that easy. It's not that simple as just signing this and let's do that. And it takes a lot of teamwork and you don't have as much power as you actually think you do in some respects. So, yeah, maybe it hasn't been that easy because I one of the questions I plan to ask Alex when I do talk to him or mm-hmm. whether it's you or me is what's your opinion of all the bunting in Japan and what's your philosophy about it? Because I still see him doing some of the things similar to what a Japanese manager would mm-hmm. do in some of those situations. So I want to talk to him and find out what his philosophy is. But even if he has a different philosophy, maybe he can't employ it all the time. So it's just the difference between having some idea and actually putting it into practical application. You know, the idea mm-hmm. might sound great, but practically it doesn't work.
Well, we saw that, you know, I think the bunt is a great topic because I remember Trey Hillman when he first arrived in Japan, and he would, you know, he used to say that he referred to the sacrifice bunt as an excuse, you know, for saying I did, you know, I'm helping. Basically.
I remember that line.
Yeah. Well, I borrowed that's one of John's lines. If you didn't want to do anything, you could get down a sacrifice bunt and raise up your hand and say, teacher, I'm helping.
I'm helping. I'm helping.
That's
me
right.
Contributing.
And he basically called it an excuse. And then, of course, what happened was the team's pitching developed and the team's defense got tighter and better. And the sacrifice bunt became a really valuable tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Trey started out as basically seeing the sacrifice bunt as a sort of a cultural thing as opposed to a real baseball necessity. And I remember Bobby was much the same way. You know, we're going to bunt in a certain way, you know, bunt with trying to get on base.
Bobby Valentine with the
The Chipotle Marines in 1995. And then, you know, comes along 2014, and he's commenting on the San Francisco Giants, Kansas City Royals World Series when these teams were locked up in these really, really heated pitchers' duels. And the announcers were talking about, look at these guys' abilities to bunt. It's so key here. And he's like going, geez, now they realize bunting's important. You know, I could have told him that. Okay, I wouldn't have told him that in 1995, but I could have told him that in 2005.
Right, right.
So, you know, they get used to it. You know, they not only get used to it, but they see the way the dynamic works, and it's fairly complicated.
Okay. So. Well, I think it's really strange because I think I had a similar conversation with Guillermo last year on opening day about the young players and the early success. And I said, you know, you got a bunch of guys you're starting. They were going to start the rookie Kuramoto at short that day. And I said, you've got a lot of young players and some young pitchers. You're going to have to get some production out of them right away. How do you feel about that? And then we found ourselves doing the same thing this year. They have young players. This time we're talking about a young catcher who's starting. And obviously he also likes Tobashira behind the plate and said he liked his demeanor and all that stuff. And I thought that really stuck with me. But the thing that really stuck with me was that when I asked him about pitching at Yokohama Stadium, and again, a lot of times I think these guys don't want to give away a lot of company secrets.
Well, sure, because as we know that all the players and coaches in NBB assiduously listen to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast for tips on how to succeed against foreign players.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That's
sorry.
A good one. That's a good one, and I would hope so. I don't think they want to put it out there for public consumption. But, you know, and he said pitching effectively inside. And I think that's really important. And I don't know that that all of the Bay Stars players or pitchers are willing to do that, and they're comfortable enough with their control to do that. We always talk to Michael Westbay, and he always says, "Well, they've got the home run disease. You know, they always end up in these tight games or in whenever the worst situation is for them to give up a home run, they seem to be." Have their backs against the wall, so to speak. And it takes a little bit of confidence to be able to throw the ball and be sure that, like, if the guy kills it, he's going to kill it foul. He's not going to hurt me with it. Or I can sneak the ball if it's a left-handed hitter. I can get it under the hands. He's not going to hurt me. We'll break bats. We'll get out of this jam. And I just don't think that they're that comfortable doing it. And that's why we see that happened to them a lot. But again, the day before I went there, it was Yuhei Takai of the Swallows who hit a ball. Obviously, he hit it hard enough to get to the outfield, but it didn't look like a home run coming off his bat, and it kind of got into a jet stream and floated out. And that's the kind of thing that can happen in that stadium. So part of it is the pitching, part of it is the stadium.
Okay, well, the other thing, and I wanted, and I've talked about this, I touched upon this last week, is that when we were looking at, you know, the teams and how well they're doing and this and that, and, you know, the one thing that really stood out to me about the Bay Stars was, as bad as they are,
record-wise,
well, as bad as they are in so many respects, they're not walking anybody.
Oh, and, yes, you did, yeah.
And the thing is, you know, if you're, and I think what Guillermo said is, I think, absolutely right on the button. If you pitch in a home run park, what you want to do is don't walk people.
Right.
You know, the rule number one is don't walk people. And I think they've got that one down. And they're going to give up home runs. As you said, you know, balls are not going to be hit well, but they're going to end up in the seats. They're going to end up out in the park. But, you know, you don't walk people to make it worse. And that's the thing they're doing a really good job of. Now here's the other thing.
Well, yeah, let's give the number. Through Saturday, they had the staff had 37 walks. And the most in the league is Chunichi, which has issued 68. And that's through Saturday's game. So
and the 37 is the low in NPB. So I think that's a really good thing to work with, because if you're not walking guys, you're taking pressure off the defense. And of course, if you're throwing, you're striking guys out, which they're not, that's a different issue. But still, the worst thing you can do as a pitcher is walk people. So, well, they don't strike people out, which is, you know, which is important. But again, it's not the biggest part. The biggest thing is not giving up walks, which is huge. You know, when Valentine had his best success with the Marines from 2004 to 2000, I can't say this, they were successful in 2009, but basically they had absurd walks allowed ratio. They walked amazingly few batters.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hallmark of the team, and you know that's something you can build on. So I like that part of it. I think what he says about pitching, he's right on about pitching aggressively. You have to do that in that park. And I remember about 10 years ago when I first interviewed Hiroki Kuroda, he said essentially the same thing. He says, look, I can't not pitch inside because I'm playing in Hiroshima, when they used to play in Shimin-Kyujo and it was really a bandbox. You know, I'm going to have to pitch people inside or I'm not going to get them out. You know, if I pitch them outside, they're going to still hit home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're going to learn to hit home runs going the opposite direction. So I can't, you know, limit myself. And I think that's his point is absolutely right. I think that's a great philosophy for that part.
And the other thing, the backdoor slider I was talking about came near the end when and he had to go, so I couldn't really follow up about it. But he said about halfway through the season, you pretty much know who's going to the playoffs. And I thought, what? You know, that's not really true. And especially last year, because they were the team that was in first place, albeit by
right,
half they, game at the
right,
All-Star
not
break.
Only were they, yeah, well, not only were they in first place by a half game, I think the last place team was like a game and a half place, a game and a half out of first.
Yeah, there wasn't much separation. We know that. But still, obviously at that point, nobody knew who was going to the playoffs. And, mm-hmm. and you know, A, do guys really feel this way? We know that they feed us. They tell us what we want to hear. Guys, we asked them if you have a chance, you know, you're 10 games out of a playoff spot with, you know, 25 games to play. Well, yeah, we got a chance. We just got to put some wins together is what they always come back and say. But if he's going to tell us that, then that's –
well, because
do we take him at face value now?
I think that happens. But on the other hand, you know, they're ball players. You don't expect them to be analysts. It's not their job. And as long as they have a mathematical chance to win – then why not? You know, you don't have to be practical. I mean, I've had players say, yeah, well, you know, practically we're out of it, but you never know.
Yeah, I've heard that you never know. You know, keep fighting, keep battling. You never know what can happen. But, I mean, he's telling us halfway through they basically know who's going to.
I don't think he thinks I think it was just a thought that crossed his mind. You know, it was like, and I think he might have wanted to say it a slightly different way.
I think what's actually happening is because he's on the Bay Stars, and that has been the case since he's been there just about every year.
Oh, that they're out of it. They're out
that, pretty much know they're not going to the Climax Series by about halfway through. But the All-Star break is a little bit more than halfway through, so I don't know.
Well, I found out, and I think this is true. I forget what I was looking for. Well, I do remember what I was looking for. I was looking for historically good or bad months. And what I found out was the Tigers do historically bad in August. What a shock.
Yeah.
And the Dragons, since 2000, have done very, very well in September. And the other thing is the Bay Stars have done very, very poorly. I mean, compared to their record, you know, like every year, they played much better until July. Through July, they play pretty well. You know, they play as they do, and then they're eliminated. And then as soon as they're basically eliminated at the beginning of August, they just go into the dumpster. They play worse than they should play.
Yeah,
that's an old Bay Stars tradition.
Tradition. So you go up in the first half and you crash like falling stars in the second half. I got it. So I went out and I want to talk about the Bay Stars now. I went while I was out at the stadium, I got to speak with Isaac Ikuma, who was on the show, I think not in 2015, but 2014, he came on the show with us, and he was covering the Marines at that time. Now he's covering the Bay Stars. And I pointed out to left field, and I said, that's where Yoshitomo Tsutsugo is going to live, because most teams aren't really going to give him anything good to hit on the inner half of the plate. And he's going to have to be patient and live in left field, whether it's home runs, it's doubles, or whatever he can get going that way. He's going to have to take advantage of pitches on the outside part of the plate. And then when they make mistakes on the inside, he's really got to drive those pitches. And I think when he makes consistent contact with that kind of approach, I think he's going to be the tough kind of an out that Alex Ramirez said last year on the JBW interview, that he really thinks that he can be one of the best hitters in Japan. So I have no doubt that that's going to be the case. But I'm surprised that, you know, the pitching is better than I thought it is, and yet they're still not winning. They're getting. I think as of Saturday they had 10 quality starts, and they got one on Saturday. They just the Yamasaki, the Komajin, blew the save in the ninth, so they didn't win the game. So that makes it 11. But that's still not a lot, and they had only won 4 games out of those 11 quality starts, and that's not a good percentage if your pitchers are putting up the numbers. And that's what Guillermo said. Look, we're pitching fine. We got to start hitting, and then we'll win some games. And I don't know what the problem was. When I was out there, and we touched on it last week about Jose Lopez not hitting, and he had a 3-homer day that day, and I thought, okay, that might get him kick-started, but it didn't. It didn't. It didn't really. It did for a couple of days, and then he went back to the place that he's been in, the doldrums, since the season started. But these guys, the Shota Imanaga is really good. He's still not winning. Yoshiki Tsunada, I like what he does on the mound. I like Shoichi Ino. At times he has some bad times or some rough patches early in games, but once he gets over that, he's good. Shun Yamaguchi threw today. He was the one who put in the quality start. He had an injury at the beginning of the season, and he's coming along now. Hopefully he gets better as he goes along. But they have the pitching. You look at their starters, and they can match up with the best starters in the Central League. So,
well, I think they can. I don't think they do, but I think they certainly are capable of doing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not saying they're just as good. I think they can go into a series no matter who where they are in their rotation and feel comfortable that they can get 2 out of 3 games.
Right. But the problem is that they've got a reasonable fact. Their offense right now, with a couple of key exceptions, is a reasonable facsimile of the 2015 Eagles. You know, they're not running the bases, you know, with their eyes closed like the Eagles did.
Head down.
That's right.
Eyes closed.
That's right.
When you hit a bump, go left.
Yeah, we'll put a siren near the dugout so you'll know where to go when you're thrown out.
Hashtag I hate.
So, yeah, that was the blind leading the blind, babe. Yeah. So it's not that bad, but they're just not getting on base. You know, that's the key thing. They're just not getting on base, and they're not hitting with power, and they're not really drawing many walks. So their offense is the antithesis of their pitching and defense, which is pretty good. Their offense is pretty bad. Now, I'm almost inclined to say it's a park effect, but I don't quite see that. So, it's going to take a little while for this offense to gel and to believe in itself. But I think, you know, I think it can happen. I think it's bad luck, as Moscoso said. You know, they lost a lot of close games. And you look at that, and I think that's true. You know, they've gotten beaten up. They've gotten beaten up a couple of times, but not, you know, it's right. Not pathetic. And again, and as long as you're not walking people, you got a chance almost every game you go into. And as far as Tsutsugo becoming one of the better hitters in Japan, I think he's there.
Yeah, he's there. It's just that I think he can be more consistent. You know, he has some times where there's some pitches that he can do things with that I think he's trying to do a little either too much or maybe taking an approach that could be, and obviously Alex is in his ear, but maybe a different approach, because I think he's trying to hit a lot of home runs. And they don't always need him to do that. Although, we're not looking at a finished product in terms of their lineup. I think Takehiro Ishikawa just got back to the lineup, and I'm not even sure he's 100%. They just got him back in there. And Takayuki Kajitani, one of the better outfielders in the, I think he was, best nine candidate in 2014, and he's still not back. So when he returns, the lineup improves, the dynamics change. Mm-hmm. I think he makes them better defensively immediately. They've got some issues in center field. They're just putting replacements out there in some respects. So I don't think we're looking at a finished product, but and that's part of why it can be better. And I think it's going to get better. But they've got to wade through this rough patch here early on, and then get the pitching together. Get it to where they get more quality starts and more out of their quality starts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think offensively, there's some weird things. And while we were talking about the sacrifice button or something, and I was just looking at the Central League stats, and the Bay Stars lead the Central League in runners caught stealing with 5, or at least they did through Saturday. Mm-hmm. And they also are last in the league in stolen bases with 3.
Yeah, well,
if you're only, if you're 3-for-8 as a base stealing team, that's actually not too bad, because you're not going crazy. And, it's better to be 3-5 than it is to be, 40-30.
Yeah, but they're not a fast team, so they're not going to steal that many bases even right. when they are good. So
and,
just don't get caught so much.
Yeah. Okay. And the next thing that occurred to me, and I was looking at it last week and we didn't get into it, is, how often teams bunt. And the thing that struck me was the bizarre number. First of all, you rarely see a Central League team be like the Central League having fewer bunts than the Pacific League.
Uh-huh.
Because the Pacific League doesn't have the number of 9 hitters bunting all the time.
Right.
But the teams that bunt the least in Japan are the Swallows and the Tigers.
Uh-huh.
And the Tigers, this is bizarre. I don't think I've ever seen this. The Tigers have more sacrifice flies than sacrifice bunts.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but it's just weird. I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, it's like I had to look at that number like 3 times to make sure I was reading it right.
Yeah, I see it. I'm looking at it too, but
it's weird.
Hmm.
It's just weird.
Okay. All right, well, obviously I think the Bay Stars are going to get better, and we're looking for bigger and better things for them. So good luck, and we thank Guillermo for sitting down with us again, and see you again at the next park, bud.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I wanted to bring up the crash test dummy play from Wednesday night. And this was in a game between the Nippon Ham Fighters and the Oryx Buffaloes. And there was a home plate collision. And I don't think it was that much of a collision, but it was enough for me to say, hey, I'm not sure they got this one right. Because we have replay. The umpires get together now and they talk about... They go and look at the video footage and they talk about plays at the plate, and there's no more blocks, no more. You're not even supposed to have collisions, is basically what they're saying. They call it the anti-collision rule / new rule. Now, on Wednesday at Kyocera Osaka or Dome Osaka, Sho Nakata was the runner and the Buffaloes Katsuki Yamazaki was the catcher, and there was a home plate, I don't know if you want to call it collision, but they did make contact, a contact play. And Nakata was ruled out, and the ball definitely beat him there. The throw was there in time. He was tagged out. There's no problem. But the more they kept showing the play over, the more I said, well, Yamazaki, the catcher of the Buffaloes, didn't really have to cross over into the third. He essentially took a throw from the right side. Mm-hmm. of the field, and he crossed over the third baseline into foul territory a little bit,
right.
thereby impeding Sho Nakata's path to the plate, even though he had the ball.
Of course, which is not against the rules.
Which is not against the rule, right. But if you ask me, I think he was standing on the line before he actually caught the ball, and then Used, used his momentum to take himself into the path of Sho Nakata. Now, according to the rules that Japan has laid out, you have to avoid contact unless it's inevitable.
No, you do not have to avoid the contact.
That is part of it. One of it is the catcher has to open up a running path to the plate.
Well, he has to.
The catcher, the runner cannot deliberately crash into the player. And three, there was another part to that rule, which is try to avoid contact.
Well, that's for the runner, not to hit the catcher above the initiate contact above the waist with the catcher who has the ball and is blocking the plate.
Okay.
So. We disagree on what – I mean, we disagree on what is blocking the plate, obviously. First of all
– Well, I'm not sure we disagree on what blocking the plate
is. Oh, I think we do, obviously, because I looked at that play. I don't see him blocking the plate. I see him – he's holding the ball in one hand, and he's standing in the baseline.
Yeah, but again, he set up –
He didn't set up in the baseline.
He didn't set up in the baseline initially, but he did cross over into the baseline to field the ball.
And he got a throw. Right.
Right. And the throw was up the third baseline a little bit, but not necessarily taking him across the foul line, which he did go across the foul line to field the ball.
And yeah, I guess if he had reacted to the wide throw and gone to stand in front of it instead of trying to reach for it and realizing he wasn't going to be able to reach it from where he was standing. Yes. But I think it's ridiculous to think, you're holding him. This is the thing that I don't get about this whole rule is that they're so concerned, you know, they've gone from a point where the catcher could basically stand in front of home plate and stand in the baseline and tackle the runner before he got there and without the ball.
Right.
And everybody would go, oh, nice block, to now where he's not allowed to be an infielder. He's not allowed to, you know, third baseman stands in front of, you know, if you've got the ball, you stand there and you hold the ball and you wait for the runner to come to you. And he's got the ball in the baseline. Now, how he got it, you may think he was being devious or something, but he wasn't set up. He wasn't set up. He was set up to get the throw in front of the plate so he'd have the most time to make a tag. I mean, yes. I've seen him do it two or three times this year, and he's got really good timing with this.
Yeah, nothing devious, nothing nefarious. Right.
But you're saying like, then he's obstructing the base. And
I just felt like he was pushing the rules a little bit, that he was creeping over as far as he could get. And the problem for me was that it left nowhere, no place for Nakata to slide, and he had no recourse.
Wait. He had no recourse except to hit him.
That was not his choice.
Hold on. Let me ask you this. If the same play happens at third base, it's okay for the runner to because the third baseman has the ball and is in his way trying to tag him, it's okay for the runner to pop him?
I think in this case it's a different kind of a play. If the runner,
different. What's the difference?
Because the runner at third base, you're trying to stop at third base. There's no reason to stop at home plate. You're running through it. In this case, he would be running past third base.
In this case, he slid late. Now, like I said, we were talking before the show. And I'm willing to cut him some slack because all of a sudden Yamasaki darted in front of his path to tag him out.
Right. So I don't think you can say he slid late. I think you can say
he wasn't planning to slide at the time that there was contact. Well, if he wasn't planning to slide, then he's got an issue.
No, he wasn't planning to slide at the time that there was contact. He was planning to slide a couple of steps after that, but because the throw...
Well,
ended up where it went, and now, the catcher, Yamazaki, went up the line to field the ball.
He slid after, first of all,
he would have been sliding 15 feet away from the plate. He wouldn't have made it.
because when he slid, he slid past the plate. When he landed past the plate, and
but
he had to.
But that's the point. You're not stopping at the bag. It's not.
Right.
It's
no,
not third base.
No,
you're going to go through it. Yeah, okay.
Yes, I've got no problem with that. But the point is, the rule explicitly says, and this is what the rule. Okay, basically, the rule is this. Now, the umpire basically has to judge whether A, the catcher is obstructing the plate, which he was not. Do you have to leave him a lane? Yes. The lane can be between your legs, as it's done at second base and third base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to give him a place of the bag to slide into. It doesn't have to be a wide open lane on one side of the baseline. It could be the inside. It could be on the baseline. It could be under him. He wasn't obstructing the base. There was, you know, in my opinion, if Nakata slides earlier, he's going to be safe because he's going to slide under the tag. It was a high throw, and I don't think he was going to be able to tag him.
Well,
okay,
we're getting into all kinds of stuff. I didn't think it was a high throw because it was a one hopper, and it just was up the line. He caught it. I think he caught it between the knee and the waist, but I just don't think he could have been sliding at the point that they made contact. I think he went into his slide at the point that they made contact because he didn't know what else to do.
Right.
But and I thought they did review the play and they didn't overturn the out call, and I thought they could have because I don't think so.
I think
it's a judgment call. And
yeah, and here again, if you're thinking that's obstruction, where it's obstruction at any base, then you're giving this some sort of, you're doing what the announcers are doing, which are saying this 160-year-old rule is a new rule where we can't allow the catcher to obstruct the base. You know, like the catcher is the problem. I mean, it was the problem in the past, but they're saying, you know, now we're not going to let you stand near the base. We're not. I mean, people were telling me, "Oh, you can't stand on the base." Who says so?
No,
everybody's.
If he'd have been on home on base, I probably wouldn't be talking about this. But the fact that he crossed over the line
again,
up the third base line
again
without the ball, and then caught the ball, and then tried to apply the tag.
In my opinion, he went, and this was the umpire's ruling. He went to go get the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't standing in the baseline waiting for the ball. Now, that's what they wanted to prohibit, was the catcher squatting in the baseline, covering home plate. That's obstruction. That's against the rules. He wasn't doing any of that.
But what he did do was,
okay,
because he was standing on the line and because he caught the ball and he was moving into the runner's path, he cut off all possible ways for Nakata to avoid having a collision,
okay,
which they talked about they're trying to get rid of. So
and I think that's why we have to give Nakata some slack here. Now, I know you're thinking, why should we even be talking about Nakata? And here's the thing. The umpires, the rule says this, and this is why I was surprised nobody mentioned Nakata. It was all about, oh, is it obstruction or not? But their whole thing was, oh, it's okay for Nakata to hit him under any circumstances, but is it obstruction? Okay, now the thing is, when he did slide, he hit the catcher first. He didn't hit the ground first. He slid, you know, he basically...
Well, again, no, it was like a dog or a cat running out in front of your car. I mean, he had...
Exactly.
He was going to hit him anyway because he.
That's an interesting analogy. You're saying that he was running and the catcher slammed into him.
No, I'm saying that the catcher slid into him, not slammed into him, but slid into him basically as he was trying to get the ball.
If that's the description, then there's no obstruction. Okay, so basically, but here's the point. What I would have done, I would have agreed with the umpires. I would have said, look, and I wouldn't say, I don't think Yamasaki was guilty of anything. I think there's zero obstruction. Obstruction is when you block off the plate. You keep somebody from – you don't let the runner approach the plate when you don't have the ball.
All right.
Now, what he was doing was no different from what any fielder does at any base. Therefore, no foul. No problem. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's going way too far. That's my opinion. Now, the other thing is I would say to Nakata, if you tried that, for example, Yamasaki's foot was inside the line, you know, if he had a clearer lane, you know, on one side, and you tried that, to dislodge the ball, as he did, because the first thing he did was look to see whether the ball had rolled loose. You know, wow. he knew what he was doing.
I don't know about that. He didn't have that much time to make a plan.
It's what they used to do, you know. But I would say to him, look, what you did, and this is what the rules say. The rules, as far as the umpires go, are you cannot penalize the catcher if he doesn't obstruct the plate, which in my mind he didn't. You cannot penalize the runner if he makes a correct slide. In which case, Nakata did not.
Okay.
So there's a judgment there, and their judgment was this was incidental. He had the ball. He was in the baseline. Contact occurred. Okay, that happens. Fine. I'm good with that. But all right. I'm also saying that you try that stuff. First of all, what I'm saying is you shouldn't hold the catchers to a higher standard. You know, we used to hold catchers to the plays at the plate to a different standard. And now they're doing it the opposite. Oh, they shouldn't be allowed to be treated like infielders. They should have to give a free shot at the base. Well, if you got the ball and you're ready to tag, this is like the line. And I don't mean to pick on you, John, but this is like the line you used when Buster Posey got slammed. And the guy did veer out of the baseline and ran into him while he was trying to fumble in with the ball, which is, what did you expect him to do? Get tagged out? Yeah, but when the infielders got the ball ready to tag you, that's what's going to happen.
Well, I remember that conversation. What was that, 3-4 years ago? But not every bit of it. And I don't remember saying all that. But anyway, to get back to this, I just thought it was reviewable. The umpires did deem it reviewable, but they didn't overturn the call. So obviously it was close. So I'm just going to keep an eye on those plays and just kind of write them down whenever they happen. And
when I talked to Osamu Ino, who's one of the NPB umpiring supervisors, we weren't talking about this play in specifically, but we were talking about the play in general. And he said, look, it's going to take, we're not used to doing this, and it's going to take a lot of accumulated experience on the basis of the umpires and the catchers and the base runners to sort of realize what's good and what isn't.
Okay.
So nobody really knows. I mean, that's why we're having this argument, because we have very little basis to work. You know, we're working from diagrams, right. You know, dance by numbers or color by numbers here. Okay.
I'll keep an eye on it. Okay. Making a two seam transition, I wanted to talk about, keep it with the Buffaloes and talk about their home run drought. Oryx finally got their home run. They got it on Wednesday in a game against the Nippon Ham Fighters that they won 4-3. And Yoshio Itoi hit it out, two-run home run, a really patient at-bat where he had this hanging curveball from the fighter starter, Masaru Nakamura. He waited and waited and just put a rip on it and knocked it out of the park. And they had gone 13 straight games from opening day without a home run, which was a modern-day record. And he also hit one the next night, and that was the only run of the game. So after going 13 games without a home run, they have home runs. It's the same guy. Itoi hits it out. So the record before that was during the one league
era, I guess.
Era, yeah. And it was either 26 consecutive games or 28.
It was 28, and that was in the autumn 1936 season when Dai Tokyo went. Played 28 games and didn't hit a home run. But of course that was a six team league.
Uh-huh.
And those six teams hit a total of 18 home runs in 99 games.
Okay.
So a little different. I think Oryx's feat is somewhat more amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll get it going, and still a bunch of guys have not hit home runs. They figured out how to win a few games, which was nice for them, and I'll be either seeing them or one of the Eagles on Tuesday when I go out to Tokyo Dome, so look forward to that. Some notes now. Yuki Yanagita of the Fukuoka Hawks is the Japanese god of walks.
Take that, Kevin Euclid.
He has drawn a walk in a Pacific League record 17 consecutive games to start the season, and he is now one behind the NPB record, which is held by Sadaharu Oh. Oh also owns the single season record for walks. He had 158 in 130 games, and I think that was back in the 70s as well. So Yanagita was on pace for 205 walks as of Saturday, but since he got another one, we'll have to see how he's doing. But he hasn't really been swinging the bat all that well. He's just now getting over this, elbow?
Mm-hmm.
Elbow problem that he had in the off season.
Surgery. He had elbow surgery.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that how long he can extend that. He took a really patient walk today, so I saw that. I think it was late in the game, so that was good. And then they rallied to win that game. We had a bunch of closer breakdowns today, but that happens. That happens.
But that Hawks game was something.
It certainly was.
Especially if you're Yuki Yoshimura.
Yeah. The guy with a lot of talent, but not the...
Yeah, let's not go into
it. Okay, all right. And finally, I don't know if the Rakuten Eagles saw my tweet or not, but I'm not too proud. I'll take
credit where none is perhaps due.
Hashtag high heat.
Credit where none is perhaps due. Thank you. I tweeted early in the week, play him or farm him. And it seems like the next day they did. They sent him out to the farm this past week. Even with the rash of injuries, they've had a few guys get hurt.
Gibson, you're a genius.
But I said, look, you need to, if you think this guy is going to be the face of your franchise at some point, then he needs to either play here or play down on the farm. But he can't be sitting next to the manager every day. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. So finally, they sent him down. He's going to get some at-bats. He had already, I think the first... Actually, he got his first hit on the farm, and then I think either 2 days later or the next day he had a two-hit game. So obviously he's gonna be productive at some point. But I heard one of the analysts who was doing a game recently when he had a pinch hit appearance and he struck out on a fastball said that he's got a little bit of a hitch in his swing, in his backswing.
And yeah, well, that's where one has hitches, generally.
And he's got to get rid of that so that he can catch up with those fastballs. Mm-hmm. And if he can make some corrections and make some adjustments, he will be back. So we'll hopefully see him back on the top team soon.
Which is interesting because in Japanese, they don't say adjustment. They say correction. So there you go.
All right. Make the correction adjustments.
Do not adjust your television set. This is not the twilight hour.
All right. And then there was a really great moment in the States the other day. And that was when Tony Barnett, formerly of the Yakult Swallows, came on and threw 2.1 innings of shutout ball in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in the game, another former MPB star, Lee Daho, formerly of the Hawks, blasted a pinch hit walk-off home run to win the game for Seattle. I'm just glad the home run didn't come off Barnett. And it was a great moment for both of these former MPB guys. I thought that was really fun. That was a really fun game for you to watch if you like MPB and you like MLB as well.
Yep.
All right, and Yudai Ono of the Chunichi Dragons, he was deactivated because of elbow trouble, and that's not good. Even though the Dragons somehow managed to sweep the Tigers in this weekend series, I don't think the future's bright for that team.
Well,
if Ono's not around.
I'll tell you, they can... yeah, he's been their most reliable starter, certainly, for the last 2 years. So.
Yeah. All right, and there was a goofy double play the other night that ended the game against the Swallows and the Giants. I think that was Thursday night at Jingu. And there were runners at second and third with one out, and the infield was playing halfway. At least they were on the right side, and a roller was hit to first base. And I think Takahiro Araki was playing first base for the Swallows at the time. And the ball, basically, the grounder took him to first base. He stepped on the bag, and then the runner, the Giants runner at third, who was not...
Tateoka.
Not Soichiro Tateoka. It was Tetsuya Matsumoto, and I think it was a contact play, and he stopped. And because he stopped, Araki was able to throw the ball home, and the catcher ran Matsumoto back toward third base.
Right.
But Takahiro Suzuki, the all-star for his pinch running, decided he would just lock himself to third base and not give it up. I don't know if he just didn't realize that there were two outs, or right. if he just didn't want to run anymore.
Well,
I don't know. That was one of the goofier double plays. And so Tetsuya Matsumoto was tagged out and the game was over. And it was just really kind of goofy. And nobody had to be happier or felt even worse. I don't know which one it is. Than Soichiro Tateoka, who has had his share of base running blunders to fill up a blooper reel.
Well, I heard last year that he was getting thrown out on the bases so often that the Eagles wanted to trade for him.
Oh,
hashtag high heat.
He'll fit in right here with us.
Just turn left when you hit the bump. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this week's question comes from Coaster Freak via Twitter. It's a high heat question. He asks, why did opposing pitchers not intentionally walk Coco Ballantyne when he was approaching Sadaharu O's home run record in 2013? Hashtag high heat.
That's a great question. And I think we all wondered that at that time. You know, is he going to see it? I think we saw it a little bit. People not wanting to give up home runs. He was hitting them. I mean, even the pitch he hit to set the record was like 6 inches up out of the strike zone.
Yeah.
So it's like it wasn't like they were grooving him. But I think a couple of things happened. And the first one, probably the biggest thing, was that Sadaharu O is no longer managing.
Yeah, so he wasn't able to do it himself.
Well, I don't think he actually did that, to be honest. I've said that. But he wasn't in a position where his team had to have his back.
Okay.
And his team is now the SoftBank Hawks. And they're in the Pacific League. And so when Ballantyne was chasing the home run record, he didn't have anybody, unless it were perhaps the Giants, who didn't want to see O's record be surpassed. But the Giants were in a pennant race. and not keen to be, although they were winning that pennant race by a huge margin. But I think that basically the reason is that times change. And Japan's kind of growing up a little bit. A little bit.
A little bit. Okay.
A little bit. And I asked... I mentioned this, and I mentioned similar things to a couple of people, Boomer Wells and also to Konishiki, the former sumo wrestler, talking about the popularity of Mongolian wrestlers, particularly Hakuho. And he said, you know, times change. So he Konishiki had a lot of trouble dealing with, you know, the racism. Mm-hmm. And the Hakuho could say it. And, you know, he got a little trouble, but not like what Konishiki brought down on himself when he mentioned it in the New York Times.
Right.
So, yeah, times change. So I think that was probably the biggest reason. But having said that, had it happened in the Pacific League, I guess it would have been the true test. Mm-hmm. If he'd had to do it against a team, you know, the Hawks. You know, if he was at 55 home runs and they had 5 games against the Hawks to finish the season, that would have been interesting.
That would have been a compelling watch for sure. Mm-hmm. My take on it is, you know, back in the 80s, mm-hmm. and I said it at the time, and I'm going to stick to my story. I think back in the 80s when games were barely on TV, and even if they were, they cut off before the end, you'd have to go to radio. And especially if it wasn't a Giants game, people really didn't know what was going on. You have to wait for the news if you really, you know, didn't turn the radio on. It's not like now where we have the internet and we've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, and we've got cable TV that shows mm-hmm. the games all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rumor back then, you know. Maybe if somebody did, maybe they did walk them, maybe they didn't. Who's got footage, you know?
Well,
I know it wasn't that extreme. It wasn't
right. 1985, it was pretty obvious because, A, it was the Giants. It was the Tigers. They were in a pennant race. They were playing against the Giants on national television.
Definitely.
It was fairly obvious.
Definitely. But again, those games didn't always get shown to the end. But yeah, it was happening. But I just think that the coverage that we have now, I think, you know, you're saying times change, and part of those times is to have Twitter blow up or something trending worldwide. You know, hey, look, they're walking this guy who's approaching this record.
Yeah.
And I just don't think Japan was ready to face that kind of...
Twitter blackmail, Twitter pressure.
There just would have been a backlash, I think.
Interesting. Well, I think certainly the Hawks... I'm sorry.
Yeah, a lot. I think it would have been worldwide for sure, because it's not like people are, you know, we've got guys now tweeting who are not in Japan and they're watching the games live.
True enough.
And so I just think it was too hard. It just, there's no way that they could get away with that in that in this day and age.
Oh,
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't think the will was there, but I think that is an issue too. I think certainly the you know, we've seen what Masayoshi Son does when the Hawks get negative Twitter response. He goes into whiplash mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cover whatever part of your body that needs to be covered to prevent criticism or avoid criticism. He's done that. He's done that as well as anybody. So, had that been an issue with his team, it probably would have gotten corrected quickly.
Yeah. So that was my take on it then, and I'm sticking with that, although that is an interesting dynamic that you bring up, that it wasn't the Pacific League. It wasn't against a guy who's a legend who's still basically affiliated with another team,
mm-hmm.
and that probably helped. That probably contributed, but I just think, you know, the times – you talk about the times change. I'm saying that it's the newness of technology, and I just think that there's just no way – that after one day and the backlash that would have occurred, I just think there was no way they could do it. So, because it was never even an issue.
No.
They pitched him all the way. I mean, they weren't even in some situations where they could have walked him that they pitched to him anyway.
I think there was some talk, you know, when he was – the problem is and the problem obviously that O talked a lot about, you know, as people approached his home record, his home run record in 2001 and 2002, Tuffy Rhodes and Alex Cabrera, was that it's really hard unless you have a big lead going, you know, unless you're threatening it really early as Ballantyne did early in September. You know, at that point, you know he's going to break it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of, if you're just walking him like he's Barry Bonds, you know, you're giving away games.
Exactly.
So, and I think that's the what you're fighting in that case. It doesn't make any sense. I saw, you know, the Giants pitchers kind of pitching around him more than usual. I saw a few teams pitch around him more than usual, you know, kind of weirdly. But the point is, it doesn't matter. He's going to break it anyway.
Right.
Because, I think he was at 54, like the 2nd of September.
Yeah. Yep, it was just a matter of time. And it's a matter of time for us as well. It's time for us to go. But thank you very much for listening to the end. Anyone else who has a question, and we thank you, Costa Freak.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else with a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at JBW Podcast, hashtag High Heat, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. Thank you very much, and enjoy your baseball.
Talk to you next time.